Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Rogue Rebels podcast. I am Sal, and I am here to talk to you about, guess what? I know shows are over, and you guys are like, what are we going to do? Like, there's no more Star Wars. There is Star Wars. Trust me, I have people here with me to talk to you about it. It's not just me. Like, this, you guys don't understand, like, you gotta, like, this is not Star Wars just, like, delivered to you, man. You just, like, open that little veil, that little curtain, and, like, take a little peek into the books, comics, video games world, and there is a treasure trove of Star Wars available to you. So with me, I have a special guest, Laura from Force Toast.
That's me. I'm here. I'm people. You mentioned you have people, and that is me, and
you
I'm happy
people.
To be here.
Yes. You're people that know about Star Wars.
I do. I try to keep in the know of Star Wars, and it's much easier to do when I love what I'm reading, watching, listening to, and in this case, the High Republic. I love it all fairly indiscriminately, so I'm pumped.
Yeah, it's really hitting its stride, and now this is kind of our first dive into phase two. We're going to be talking about Convergence, which is the Zoraida Cordova book, which is like the, I guess you'd call it like the big Del Rey offering. Because even within the, like, you know, people are like, well, Star Wars is only movies. And then now they're like, well, Star Wars is like TV shows also. But I don't watch cartoons. And then, like, well, there are Star Wars books, but I don't read them. And then if you go to, like, the books, then people are like, well, I don't read the young adult ones. So, like.
It just keeps getting worse and worse the farther you go down the rabbit hole.
No matter where you are, somebody's, like, put a little door there. It's like, nah, I'm good.
Yeah. And you're listening to two people who love the cartoons, like, in a really, 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 really big way. So don't tell us that you don't watch the cartoons, because we will be offended by that. Mm-hmm.
Don't do that. Don't do that to me. Say it to my face. Watch what happens on Twitter. Probably not a whole lot. I will not like your tweet, sir or ma'am.
Boom. It will go unliked. Mm-hmm. That's the best I can do.
One less heart for you. But Convergence is the Del Rey book, so, you know, but technically the phase two of the High Republic started off with Path of Deceit and Quest for the Hidden City, which was like the YA and the middle grade books. From what they've been saying at some panels and stuff, they're saying that like if you just follow the YA books, it's sort of like a complete-ish story.
Okay.
And then if you just follow the, like, Del Rey books, it's a complete story. And then if you just follow the middle grade. So I'm guessing what that means is, like, most of these books are going to follow the same characters.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm like, did they say that same thing about phase one? I don't remember hearing that
anywhere.
Yeah,
they didn't say it like that.
Okay.
But they kind of were, like, for the most part. But then, like, if you, what's her name? Vernestra Rowe was introduced in the middle grade books, but then jumped up to the YA books. You know, by the second wave or whatever. And then sort of, I think, went back. Because, like, by the last thing, she's in a middle grade book again.
Yeah, for the most part, she was, like, was it YA or middle grade? I don't remember. But she also, like, she had a little cameo in the comic line, the adult line. So I'm like, yeah, she was kind of all over the place. And I feel like with the first phase, you at least needed to read adult and young adult. Like, maybe you could have skipped over, I guess, a little bit of the middle grade, but, like, you kind of needed all of that. And that's interesting that they're sort of doing a different approach with phase two.
Yeah, I'm curious to see. I think we're still going to have that, like, what I call bleed over.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, like, how, you know, like you're saying, Vernestra shows up in the comics. It's not really necessary that you know who she is, but if you read the books, you're like, oh, Vernestra just cut a ginger in half. How dope.
Yeah.
You know. Or for me, anytime Orbelin showed up, I was like, yeah! Do you have... Who's your Glup Shitto from Phase 1?
Ooh.
Do you have one? I don't want to put you on the spot. But...
No, I'm like, that's a little bit on the spot for me. I don't know if I have a Glup Shitto from...
I think Orbelin is mine.
Yeah, and that's... I think that's really the perfect answer, if we're being honest. Yeah, I'd have to give it some thought, honestly.
It's either that or Nuran Baka Rakana, just because I like saying their name.
It's a solid name, and you nailed it. I think you got the pronunciation totally right. I've been practicing nothing to go off of.
At home, nice. In my room, often, you know. A lot
in front of a mirror.
Yeah, theater kids. Theater kid training right there. Boom.
Amen.
Real quick, on the business, go check us out at theroguerebels.com. Go like our Facebook page. We are Instagram, TikTok, and when Hive comes back, we're going to be there, I promise. At The Rogue Rebels. We're Rogue Rebels fam on Twitter, which is still on fire, but we're still there. Like Sephiroth turning into the flames. Let's see. My daughter has a podcast. It's called Star Wars Geek Girl. Go check them out because they've been doing a bunch of that Andor stuff. And actually, I was on the last episode for the finale with Steel, where we talked about smacking people in the face with bricks of the fallen. And I don't think there's a better thing to be talking about, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, that's it. That's all anybody's talking about right now. And all they should be talking about.
Exactly. I'm glad for it. I'm here for it. Now that we're done with Andor, diving into the books. Laura, where can people find you on the webs?
Well, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at @shutup_Laura. You can find my podcast at Force Toast to Star Wars Happy Hour on Twitter and Instagram at Force Toast Pod. And then the show that I do with John Rocha on his channel is called The Jedi Way. And you can find that on his channel on YouTube. I am also on Hive, and I just learned just now from you, Sal, that Hive is down, I guess, for the it's down for the count for the time being, which is very sad.
Not like for the count. They're like, hey, we're like fixing stuff, like for real fixing stuff. But, you know, like, I don't know. They're saying like, remember when like Twitter got leaked or hacked and they were just like, whatever. They're like, we haven't got like leaked or hacked, but we're like shutting it down. We're fixing all the security stuff before that happens. So,
no, that's yay. Fair. And that's I'm like, a good move.
All right. That's good.
Yeah.
You know, and I hope it also takes like some of that loading time down because I like Hive, but also it's kind of slow for us Android people.
I think it's a little slow for iPhones
too.
Is
it everybody?
And it's a great site. Honestly, I really like it. But yeah, they definitely have some like improvements that they could do. And it's kind of one less place for us to have to post. So that's kind of nice. We're off the hook for a little bit. Let's silver lining this.
Yeah. I like the energy there. So I hope that continues.
Same.
You know, I was talking to somebody last week. I forgot. And I saw a post on somebody I follow, and they were like, this is great. When do the terrible people arrive?
And I was like, shortly after the good ones did.
That's pretty much it, you know. Followed by, you know, hey, if I blocked you on other apps, don't try to follow me here.
Yeah, same here.
Good times. All right. I mean, look, like my spoiler free of this book is I really, really, really like the characters. It really focuses on these, the plot focuses on Irem and Erino and the war that's happening there and the characters involved. So in some ways I feel like this is way smaller of a story than like we're used to in these like big Del Rey High Republic books that usually are very grand and galaxy, spanning.
Yeah, I can see that. I think we're kind of laying the foundation in here, though. Yeah. So I imagine it's like by the end of this phase, it'll maybe feel a little bigger. But for right now, I totally see that. But yeah, it feels a little small.
Yeah, but I love the characters. They're all extremely like well done. The scenes are beautiful. All of their interactions and the depth to the characters is really, really, really good.
Yeah, they're super fleshed out. It's great.
Yeah. So I really enjoyed the book. Some of the, like by the time you get to whatever, the third act or whatever, like stuff starts getting a little crazy.
Yeah.
And, I'm hoping either, like, I'm not sure if I missed stuff or if stuff is just going to be picked up in later books because like, that's how crazy it got and like, not complicated. I don't want to use that word because it doesn't feel that way. It feels really well done. And the resolution feels good and real and the story is great. But also there are like a few things where I'm like, wait, what happened with that guy? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You know,
This one's definitely worth a reread because I like had started rereading kind of, or re-listening to essentially the beginning of it. I didn't reread the entire thing a second time, but there was so much stuff that I did not pick up on the first time through reading this. Right. So I was very pleased with going back and actually reading at least the beginning again. I imagine reading the second half again will be the same thing because Alice and I talked a little bit about this on our show, but the end does feel a little bit rushed for me personally.
Okay.
And I think she kind of felt the same way too, but it just feels we're just like cutting from person to point of view to point of view to point, like the kind of very quickly. So when you're listening to the audiobook, it's a little bit, I think it's harder to sort of stay with it, but that's really like a, that's kind of a me thing when it comes to the audiobook stuff. I just kind of prefer that medium.
Right. But all in all, like, I really, really enjoyed the book. And like you said, it's definitely worth a reread. I went the other way. I like went back to the end of the book to really figure out all those things that I was like, because once, you know, I guess for a majority of the book, the characters are together.
Yeah.
And once they sort of split up and you're following, I'm like, wait a minute, who am I? Okay, now it's this. Okay, now it's that guy. Okay, now it's her. Now it's him. Now it's who.
Yeah.
So I think that's where I was getting really like confused. But then like some of the stuff is really, really well done. And a lot of the resolutions are really nice. And I really like the main characters. Like the main four characters.
Yes.
Are super well done. And I don't know if half of them are going to show up again. But like, man, they're cool.
That's all. I'm in the same boat. I mean, there were a couple of instances where I really wanted to, before this book came out and I was almost done with it, reading the advanced reader copy, I really wanted to be like, I am absolutely terrified to finish this book because I'm so afraid of what is going to happen to these four main characters that I absolutely love. I fear for them so much in where I am in the story. But ultimately I finished, and we'll get into spoilers a little bit, you know, obviously later. But in terms of non-spoiler review, I'm in the same boat. I fucking love this book. I mean, this book had like everything for me. It checked a lot of boxes that like that forbidden romance, that kind of not really, a little bit of enemies to lovers, but not the enemy. It's light on enemies. Like that whole component of it is just so well done. And you said it already, but these characters are so well established in this story. They feel so real and they feel like you've known them for ages, and like the political clashes, and you've got this like Coruscanti prince, and you've got these royals from this other planet. It just has, and then there's kind of the perfect amount of like space battle content, because that's one of those other things I kind of struggle with in these books sometimes, is like, especially with like the Thrawn novels, like too much space battle for me is it doesn't take much for it to cross over that line. Right. And this book didn't cross over that line at all. It's mostly pretty grounded, which I really liked.
There's almost like another level, like on Thrawn book specifically, like you go from, sometimes you're reading, I don't know, an Alphabet Squadron book and you're like, oh, okay, I can follow these two people doing, you know. But then once you jump to Thrawn, he's like, well, the fleet is going to do this, but on the other side, and, you know, like, and then it's like a whole nother level because now you're dealing with like fleets against each other.
Yeah, like, I was actually going to say, like, oh, yeah, the Alexander Freed, like, Alphabet Squadron's a little bit like that for me, too. But now you're like, oh, no, it's not. I'm like, yeah, for me, it kind of, it's still much space battle. Yeah,
in my head, the first answer was, like, a Rogue Squadron book, like the old Legends book. Yeah. But I wasn't sure if that would reverberate the same way. So I kind of jumped to what example I have in canon now.
Yeah, there's, you know, the High Republic, I think, has done a really, really good job overall of balancing that. I mean, even in like the Fallen Star, where there is a lot of it sort of taking place in space, it's also taking place a lot on Starlight Beacon. So it still kind of feels grounded in that. And I really appreciate that about the High Republic in general, is that it's just, there isn't too much of that. And when there is a lot of it, it's, the descriptions are good enough that I can follow, even in the audio format, and not get too lost in it.
And like, just speaking of audio format, Mark Thompson does his usual, nails everything.
Yes.
And a thing that I'm seeing a lot lately, and I guess by lately, I mean probably like 2017, 2019 maybe, is when they started using like not always Star Wars music in the audiobooks.
Yes. Yeah.
And particularly, I think like Crash of Fate was where I first noticed it and was like, oh, this is like really good. And Alphabet Squadron, I think the first Alphabet Squadron book, they also dove into some different stuff. And
I remember
was like,
that.
Wow. In this book, like, in all the audiobooks, usually it's like used so well. And this book, I've heard, because there's always like a little part of me that's like, I wonder what the reason, did they not have the rights to blah, 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 or this or that or that? But they used Star Wars music in this book, and then sometimes they didn't. So I was like, oh, okay, like they just are doing whatever they want, whatever the engineer or, you know, whoever's director, you know, so that's cool. Like, and I liked it. I think I don't like it when they use it to intro the book.
Okay.
Because like usually like the intro is like this real bombastic, like da, 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 Star Wars, okay. Convergence, but it's like not Star Wars.
Yeah.
And you're like, it's like immediately like, what? But then I'm like, oh, okay, they don't want to use the regular movie kind of thing. But in the book, in the story, it always, like, it's noticeable in a good way.
It's very effectively used in this book in particular, I think. I've talked about this a little bit with Alice, too, because sometimes we'll be like, why did they use Across the Stars there? That is really strange. Mm-hmm, like, when we've talked about some of the other audio stuff, and any whatever they used in this book in whatever situations, it worked perfectly for me.
In fact, some of it reminded me a lot of A Crash of Fate, and I don't know if that's like subconscious Zoraida Cordova writing, or if like they maybe use similar music, or you know what I mean? Like, I don't know what it is, but I remember when I was doing A Crash of Fate, the audiobook, and being like, oh, this like really fits this moment. Like, and the it's a really good audiobook. And this one, I felt the same way. Like, oh, this is really cool for this particular scene.
Yeah. You know? Mark Thompson does a great job, I think, in this. Again, I want to get more into some audiobook like observations, but I don't want to spoil anything, so I'm not going to say anything yet. But he, for the most part, nails it. There's like one character in particular that I feel like they changed from Path of Deceit in the audio, and I'm just like not real thrilled about the change.
Understood. I have the same one. Yeah. But that character was way more pronounced.
Yes.
In the other book.
Yeah, we're on the same page here.
It's like a bit part, and then you're like, wait, what?
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Weird.
Yep.
Good times. I guess we should just jump to spoilers. Well, real quick, before I jump to spoilers, High Republic Phase 2, heavy on the romance in the beginning.
Oh, God, I love it so much.
Man.
Oh, like, I'm so happy.
Two out of three books, heavy on the romance. But
I don't know, though. Here's the thing with this book, though, is that I feel like it's I don't think it's too heavy handed with it to the point where if you're not a romance person, you're still going to enjoy this book. Like, I mean, Alice is one of those people who does not really get into the mushy stuff. She's not in Star Wars for that. It's kind of one of her least favorite things about any of the books that we read or anything.
Look,
we
I'm
watch,
call
whatever.
Her out on the podcast right now. What's the matter, Alice? You don't want to be loved? You don't like love? How?
She just doesn't like the mushy stuff, but she's very open about that. But she, I think, still got a lot of enjoyment out of this book, and I kind of thought that, you know, they do a good job of balancing it, where they're just not too heavy-handed. It's not too mushy. You get like just enough that like it just leaves you wanting more. You want them to dive a little deeper, go a little farther, if that's what you're into. And if you're not, you're like, it's just enough for you to like still enjoy the book.
There's plenty of other plots that are like totally action-packed or whatever, or pew-pew, that will keep your like Star Wars interest if you're one of those people who's like, cool, Star Wars is never romantic. I love it. Well, I guess what I meant is that like after such a romance drought, you know, after a past Star Wars where we have like, you know, 10 couples maybe that we can come up with on the top of our heads, out of thousands and hundreds of Star Wars characters.
Well, especially with like, I mean, we're coming off of Andor, and that is not a component of Andor at all.
Right.
At all. So I was really missing that in my Star Wars to the point where like when I was reading Path of Deceit, I was like, shit, I did not realize how absolutely starved for this that I've been.
So it's just, it's like two out of three books, like out the gate. After, like, the last thing that I can remember is, like, I don't know, Dark Disciple, Lost Stars, and Crash of Fate, you know?
Yeah, a little bit of, like, Elzar Avar stuff, but it's mostly one-sided in Phase 1, so.
Very understated.
Yeah.
But, yeah, for a breath of fresh air, a lot of fun, very interesting, and presumably, I'm guessing, is setting the stage for what's about to happen. But to be fair, that's how I felt at the end of Path of Deceit. Mm-hmm. And now I'm like, okay, there's going to be a lot happening in phase two, or I don't know what.
Yeah. I mean, I think, like, what's next? It's the Battle of Jeddah is the audio original,
right?
So,
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So, like, I'm pretty excited for that. I am a little bit slightly annoyed because we already have that cover for Cataclysm, so at least we have some idea of, like,
right,
who's coming out of that.
Right.
The battle alive and what they're coming out of it with. So it's mm-hmm. going to be an interesting ride, I think. By the time we finish that, so we'll get there though.
Awesome, I've been all in on the High Republic since like day one, and phase two is shaping up to be super interesting and fresh.
Yeah,
but like the beginning of phase one, at first you're like, wait, who's this? You know, that's another one of these that we're picking up as we go. But I guess let's just dive into spoilers, man. The main characters in this book, Gela Nittai, is like the main Jedi girl, and she's like a new knight. She hangs around with these like other two masters, Krayton's son and Charul Roy, who is like a Syrian Jedi with a goatee or something, and they just always talked about his beard, and I was like, this guy's rad.
You're like, this guy has one trait and it's a beard.
Yeah, and he always comes in like, very interesting. So he was very much the not the Obi-Wan. He almost felt like the Qui-Gon, right?
He had a little Obi-Wan vibe too, I think. Yeah, okay. I was picking up on that.
Yeah. He's like the guy for that. And then there's like one of their Padawans who I think is
Enya. Krayton's
son's Padawan is Enya, and she's like a very fun, bubbly little girl Padawan, which is a great foil for this Jedi Gela Nittai who has been through some stuff and takes her like Jedi job seriously, right away. That was fun.
She does. I like Enya a lot. She did bring some sort of fun energy, because I think when it comes to like Gela and when it comes to like Ciri, we've got like these great women characters that are like very strong and very like, I don't, like, secure and established in who they are and what they're about. And then you've got Enya, who's just kind of like bouncing around like a little bubble the entire book.
Yeah.
It's just great.
I don't even know how to like describe her. Like almost like a tight, like very much like a mischievous Yoda energy, but like an actual child, not a like 900-year-old just like punking fools all day.
Yeah, no, I think that works.
Because Yoda's like an old man acting like he's a fool. And I guess Enya's not acting like a fool, but she's definitely like just having fun and enjoying being a Jedi, which like there's nothing wrong with that. And that's great. You always see all these so over-serious Jedi.
Yes, she's very young and very fun.
Yeah. So they end up getting sent to so Iram and Erino are these twin planets that are locked in a forever war, but apparently the forever war is like kind of goes up and down, and like the big, you know, the most recent phase of the forever war started like 5 years ago when the prince was killed / died in over the prince of Erino died over Iram, and that started up the like fighting again.
Yeah, so this forever war has really only been going on for 5 years, but it's been like there's been tensions and there's been issues between the two planets like for decades. I mean, I think our main characters make references to like this has been going on since like their grandparents, if not like well before. So yeah, it's been a while.
It's like generational war.
Yeah, to the point where like nobody knows really why anybody's how did it all start and why are they still fighting? And it's kind of just this ongoing thing everyone's learned to live with without, and they don't even question anymore like why it's happening.
Yeah, and it's very much like I think the first like scene we see on Erino is they're like in a planet and it's like all dusty and the rations are short. And then it's like, well, you know, ever since the war started, like we can't, you know, there's so much crap in the air because of all the fighting and blowing up stuff, and the rations are rationed now because we can't da 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 da. So the people are very much like, not like acclimated, but they're just like, well, you know, we're at war again. Everybody put on your hoodies and rebreathers.
Yeah, and it's kind of happening on Iram too. I mean, like the very beginning when we meet Fontu, like he's handing out rations and like helping some of the like the poor people in like a sort of slum area of the planet. So it's like this is just like this ongoing thing that they've all learned to live mm-hmm. with, and or at least the royals have. I mean, we don't spend a whole lot of time, I think, kind of on the ground level with some of these ordinary citizens kind of learning mm-hmm. what they're going through. We're mostly with our sort of main characters.
Yeah.
But it's really sad. I mean, like, how long this has been going on. They've got this one moon that they all share, and like, there was a time in the past where like all three of these places were all sort of a united front, and now we're just in this like forever long mess.
Yeah. The main characters are the heirs of these two planets. So Fantu is the prince of Iram, and Ziri is the princess of Erino. Yes. And then like, also like this is like where the themes of the book and duality and all that really starts to jump out. Like, Iram is like a water planet, and like they're in danger of waves, and they all do this. And like, Erino is this very like stone, rock, red planet. They're like warriors, and the other guys are like fishers or what. Like, even the war, you know, they wear blue and they wear red. Like, the very, I don't know, Fire Nation like energy of this place.
Yeah, the Thylefire Squadron is the name of their squadron, and they're like established by Thylefires, like how they come of age. It's a whole thing.
Yeah, yeah. But I like that. I like the idea, and then like how much it comes into play with like everything in this book, because even the characters themselves are like opposites. Like, Ziri is a warrior trained from blah 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 on Erino, and she's like the leader of the starfighter squadrons. And Fantu is like, he's like an orphan that was like adopted into the royal family, and he's like, he's not a warrior, but he's like, he goes and he helps people. He helps all the, you know, he like, when we meet him, he's rendering aid and supplies and all that to people who need it. So it's like, even they're opposites, and it's, I don't know, it's really cool.
Exactly. Yeah. The fact that she's like the princess of this planet, but she's also the captain in their military. Like, she's got some major Leia vibes. Ziri does, I think, through like a good part of this book. I just absolutely love her as a character. I was like hooked from the very beginning. I was just like, I just want more. And then we got a good amount, I think, of time and from sort of her point of view in this book. It was very satisfying.
Yeah. And it definitely, like, you know, the Jedi, her, him, and then the next character we're going to meet, Axel. Like, the book does do a good job of spending time with each of them. And those are like the four mains that we learn from, see in the book and all that. Axel is the child of the Chancellor, who like grew up on Coruscant being rich, and he's like a spoiled guy, and he just hangs out and gambles. And it seems like when he meets our main characters, like they all kind of hate him, because like they're like this dude, and like they're all torn by duty and this and that. And of course, like, you know, Gela, who takes her job very seriously, is like, what is happening?
Oh yeah, the fact that they're like on such opposite spectrums, like Axel Greylark and Gela. It's so funny. And he's also like kind of the equivalent of like a celebrity in this sort of day and age. I mean, he's like the subject of like tabloid fodder, and he's like this very handsome, eligible bachelor. And he's just, you know, wandering all over the galaxy gambling for the most part. Yeah. It's just kind of how he spends most of his time.
Look, I may have been watching too much Crown lately, but this like kind of, there were multiple points in this book where I was like, this is very like royal family-ish.
Oh, God, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Ziri, like, there's where they get their shipments into, like, basically what's happening right now is the war on Iram and Erino, that's been disrupting their planet for years or whatever, is starting to affect hyperlanes and therefore affecting, like, other surrounding systems, therefore becoming, a problem for the Republic, right?
Yes.
So they're like, all right, like, you guys need to chill out, like, because now shipments aren't safe. Like, now other people are, you're affecting everybody else with your stupidity and nonsense.
Yeah, exactly. These two planets aren't officially part of the Republic, but that's why essentially Chancellor Mollo, the second chancellor, we've got two in this time period. Mm-hmm. That's essentially what brings him out to the Outer Rim in the first place, is he's got to be like, you know what, you guys can like stand divided amongst each other if you want to, but you cannot divide the galaxy the way that you're doing it now.
Right, right. And that's another example of duality. You have Chancellor Mollo and Greylark, and Greylark is like, I do all the bureaucracy and kick it on Coruscant. And Malo's like, I like to go, like, visit the Outer Rim worlds and do that stuff. Like,
yes, he also came from, I think, more humble beginnings than Chancellor Greylark,
like,
who,
it, yeah.
Yeah, she's sort of noted for being, like, growing up fairly wealthy, I think, on Coruscant, yeah, in sort of high society. And he's like, I came from the planet Mon Cala, and we dealt with wars constantly there. Mm-hmm. And here I am now kind of just, like, staying... Sort of, he likes to kind of keep himself among the people, it sounds like, more so than spending a lot of time on Coruscant. He kind of leaves that to right, Chancellor Greylock, right, for the most part.
Yeah, really cool. Also really good characters and an interesting idea that we haven't seen before. Double Chancellors.
Yeah,
That work
yeah,
together, that's kind of rad.
I remember like reading the, I think it was like the Phase 2 crawl, the first time, and being like, Chancellors, like, are there more than... one? So I was sort of prepared, but I was not prepared for how well I think the situation kind of works in this day and age, to the point where I'm just like, why did they not always have two chancellors? It kind of makes, yeah, sense that they would have one on Coruscant and one going around the Outer Rim. It's a lot of job for one person, you know.
One guy goes up to the Senate and he's like, look, the other guy's a Sith, y'all, like, trust me, like, I saw him yesterday all underground with a hoodie on it. I know that chin anywhere.
Somebody had to hold that person accountable. Yeah. We didn't have that in the age of the Skywalker.
That's what happened.
Yep.
So Ziri's like taking her, she's leading her squadron and they're trying to get a shipment or something. And one of the ships is like sabotaged and it like goes over into IRAM space, which like they're not supposed to do. And then it starts shooting and the guy, you know, the pilot, it's a very much like, you know, this is like an older pilot that like she's been flying with forever. And now he's like, I don't know. I'm going to retire tomorrow. Oh, no, my ship is, like, going crazy.
Yeah, like, this poor pilot loses control of his ship, and they can't figure out why, and it's just, the ship is just kind of, like, bucking around uncontrollably.
Yeah.
And when we get this, you know, we're in the middle of a three-day ceasefire between the two planets, which apparently is the longest they've gone in a ceasefire in,
nice,
like, forever. So it's just, yeah, unfortunately, this is just a series of unfortunate events that we learn actually was caused. It was a purposeful thing that a group of people caused to happen, but, mm-hmm, yeah, in trying to sabotage this whole ceasefire and peacekeeping,
exactly,
between these two.
So... The pilot's ship crashes, and Ziri, in trying to go help the pilot, also crashes on IRAM, like,
yes,
in the seas. And then you have, you know, Prince Fontu, who sees ships crashing, and he's like, I'm going to go help. And he, like, dives in the water, and he saves her and stuff. And she's like, what are you doing? Like, I'm from Arano. And he's like, I was just helping you. So, like, right away, like, especially in the beginning of the book, very much was the feeling was like, well, Arano sucks, y'all. Is it just me? Or does Arano suck? But as we get through the book, like, you sort of see both sides.
Oh, yeah. Like, both sides suck a little bit.
Yeah.
So.
But at the beginning, it's like, well, he's just, like, helping her. And, like, she's trying to fight. And, like, the king comes barging in to be like, well, give me back my daughter. And, like, we will fight them to the, like, very much uncompromising and, like, angry king energy.
Yeah, yeah. He's real old and real set in his ways. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the monarch of Arano, not the best leader of the people, I don't think.
And he's not being advised very well, to be fair.
No. Mm-hmm. He's got some devils on his shoulder,
yeah,
literally both, yeah, shoulders, I think.
Yeah. So let's see. He rescues, Fontu rescues Ziri. The king of Arano is pissed.
Let's see. How dare you rescue her?
Oh, so yeah. So like the viceroy and like all the captains are like, okay, let's go attack IRAM. Aha, for Ziri. Meanwhile, Ziri is taken to the queen. You know, Fontu takes her to his mom. And she's like, look, like, we're going to give you back. We're trying to have this peace conference. The Republic has already come in over orbit and stuff and all this. And like, you know, please tell your dad that you're coming home and, like, not to attack us. But he's, like, not answering the comms or something like that. She's like, I left 3 messages.
Yeah.
And we're also seeing little scenes of these people that are Path of the Open Hand that are, like, kicking it around IRAM.
Yeah, we get a couple of, like, children, I think. Or really, one of them is a child or one of the mother's, mm-hmm, children or whatever. The other one, I think, kind of becomes one officially a little bit later in the story. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we've got a couple of them just sort of doing her bidding on the sly through a lot of the book.
And you still don't, like, you, most of this book, if you don't pick up Path of Deceit, you kind of don't really know what it's all about. And even now, you're still, like, not exactly sure, but you know that they're all sort of putting these people in the hands of the mother and the path. But you're just not sure why. At least I'm not.
Yeah. Yeah. We learn basically later on that, like, these two people are the ones who later sabotage the Arano pilot ship ultimately causes Ziri to crash. And I think they were, if I recall, I think they may have been, like, sort of aiming for her.
Yeah. I think they got the wrong ship, or it was supposed to be her ship or something like that.
Yeah.
That way, like, she would die, you know, just like her brother. And then, like, the king would just be like, fight forever or whatever.
Yeah.
And then they would be like, prophet, or however that works. I'm not sure. It's that second question mark that I don't get.
Yeah.
But, like, it's clear that they're, like, manipulating events here on these planets or something like that to further their own ends, which we're still not sure exactly.
Yeah, and they kind of got involved because it sounds like the Queen of Iram ultimately went to them for aid because, again, this war has been going on forever. So we have her going to them for rations and for medical supplies and things like that. And they provide all of this help and they don't ask for anything in return. And then, of course, later the mother does come and ask the queen for something in return. And the queen does not want to give her what she's asking for. So she basically, like, kind of talks around it to try and get out of it. And this is the mother in the path of the Open Hand, basically exacting revenge on Iram, is them coming in and sabotaging things sort of lightly throughout the book.
Mm-hmm. And it, like, goes back a few and goes back, like, and forth a few times. Like, some of the things that happened with the assassin, like, there's, like, assassination attempts and people are getting killed. And then, like, when they start trying to unravel this mystery, like, of the ship in particular, they're like, oh, like, it looks like it was placed by Iram. Well, it also looks like they made it like that because they was really Arano that were just, like, so there's all this, like, weird second guessing of each side trying to figure out how to pin it on the other side and being like, well, we don't know for sure. Almost similar to, like, Brotherhood, if you read that book.
Oh.
Like, there was a very much of, like, that same energy over there where they're like, well, it was the Republic. It's, like, their stuff. Well, but there's also, they found a whole other thing that said it was the Separatists.
Yeah, yeah. You know? No, that's good. You're kind of, like, sort of guessing all over the place because you don't know who's good and who's bad. Yeah. You just kind of know that, like, these two young royals want everybody to come together, but it kind of seems like them against both of their worlds.
Yeah, yeah. Axel, like, his mom gets him out of prison or something. Because he was gambling and the place was raided and he got arrested. And then, like, he's like, well, you left me in there for, like, 3 days. This must be serious. Or something. Like, he has a very strained relationship with his mother, the Chancellor.
Yeah. Major mommy issues happening here. Although we do learn that it's sort of rooted in this whole situation with his father.
Yeah.
Who died who knows how many years ago. Because we don't know exactly how old Axel is in this.
Right.
At this part of the story. But his father died when he was less than 20 years old. They do mention that.
Yeah.
Basically because his mother, the Chancellor, sent Axel and his father on some mission, and the father subsequently dies, and Axel blames her. And there's actually a really sweet scene, like, after this, the same scene where she springs him from the joint, essentially, he does tell her, you know, like, I don't blame you anymore. And that actually, like, makes her tear up. But then we sort of get that last little thought from him right before the chapter ends where he's like, I don't blame her anymore. I blame the Jedi.
Yeah. Yeah. And, like, it's a whole, like, heart-pounding story. And it's like he tried to save his father, but his father was already dead. So, like, the Jedi just, like, force yoink him out or something like that. And he's like, they made me leave. You know, he's got, like, a sad story. But he really dislikes the Jedi. So this is going great for our book, I'm sure. So they, you know, she's like, I'm going to send you there and then you can have your inheritance. Just do this mission. Go be my representative because Malo didn't contact me or whatever.
Yeah, she's like, you're going to be my spy, but, like, don't tell anybody that you're my spy. You're just my representative because we want these two planets to join the Republic. So that's your story and you're sticking to that.
Cool, cool, cool. So they go. Then meanwhile, back on the Jedi ship at Iram and Arano, like, a bunch of stuff happens. The, like, Viceroy and, like, somebody convinces somebody to like kill themselves by walking out the airlock.
Yeah.
And I thought that's the dude that, I thought that was the person that actually sabotaged the ship. But now I'm wrong.
Yeah, no, that was, so I guess the person that sabotages, or actually, so we, the, is the person who sabotages the ship the same person that tries to, not assassinate the queen, but essentially confronts the queen?
I think so. The Kage girl?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I'm still not sure. Do we know which, what those aliens look like? Has there been like an example of them before?
The episode, season four of the Clone Wars, episode Bounty, where Ventress fights with Boba Fett and the clone, like she joins them to do a bounty hunting.
Yeah.
They go like to this planet underground.
Okay.
And if you remember, they're like kind of on a train. They're supposed to deliver a thing. And then she opens a thing and it's like, there's a princess in there. And it's like, she's getting delivered to the, like the royal person who just wants her as his wife, and the Kage warriors that are coming to fight them, like riding giant centipedes. They look like ninja, very like ninja-esque.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like, yeah, they have glowing yellow eyes and stuff, but the girl had pink eyes.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah.
So that's what Kage look like.
Yeah, because at one point they're sort of described as having like grayish skin or something, and I was like, I do not remember. I need to look this up. And then I didn't, so thank you for that.
You're welcome. That's what I'm here for. Yeah. So there's a bunch of stuff happening. A guy kills himself by diving out the airlock. We also have the queen, like, having contact with the open hand people. Uh-huh. And then you're like, oh no. And then, like, Fontu sees somebody in the corridor, and I think it's, like, the viceroy or something. And he's like, well, that guy looks suspicious, but I can't chase him or else I'll look suspicious. And then, like, what if, like, maybe I should just go to bed or something like that. And then,
yeah,
like,
he also like overhears Sugaru and Ziri talking. He's like one of the captains or lieutenants or something in the military. Mm-hmm. And I think he like kind of likes her. Like, were you getting that vibe too? That he was like, at one point he's like, hey, I want to talk to you about something. And she's like, can it wait? I'm busy. Like, and they never go back to it.
Yeah, I don't know if I got that vibe. I got the more like, look, you're like, you, this is what's really going on. Like, I get that a lot from him. He was like, well, you can't trust them. Very much like that older negative influence.
Yeah, he did come off as that's why I felt like icky about it, because I was like, he seems more like he's older than her, like he's sort mm-hmm. of a mentor figure. So I'm not, maybe it was just like an audiobook delivery thing where I was kind of picking up on something that wasn't actually there. But unfortunately Sugaru dies at some point. Yeah. He's assassinated on the ship.
Fontu goes to bed and he's like, it's a dead body. And then everybody wakes up. But yeah. So, and that's when Axel shows up and he's like, hey, what did I miss?
Yeah.
Right? Which is like also the best thing in the world, because you have the like jerk that nobody likes showing up at the most serious like part of the show. And then like there's some stuff, like I think it's when the Irono people, like the royal, like the king arrives and all that. Because they show up with the drill ships and they're like, oh no, what's going to do? What are we going to do? And Gela gets in the ship, but she can't find a ship, so she ends up taking Axel's ship, because she's like, well, we'll take this one.
Yeah.
And then she runs into a dead body, which is the dude that threw himself out the airlock.
Yeah, Braxton. That was his name.
Yeah.
And essentially, it's that Rev, or maybe it's not Rev, it's the Viceroy, Farrell, who comes to him, and he's like, I have a mission for you. You're going to kill yourself. And he's like, okay. And that's kind of the end of that guy, until Gela comes across his body in space.
Yeah. So they all go back to the ship. Axel is updated on things. And then I think, is this like when they sort of, when Ziri comes up with her idea?
I think that may have happened actually a little bit before this. So this peace summit goes on for a couple days and it's not mm-hmm. going well. I mean, we just have these two sides just like throwing accusations at each other. And like one day, I think one of them just like reads the names of all the dead soldiers off of like a data pad. And that's all that they do the entire day. I'm like, wow, that's super productive. Okay.
Look, the one scene of Malo practicing his little speech in his room, like, peace is a choice. Like, and then like crickets when he actually delivers it is the best.
Yes, it's he's trying to play his part in this, and sometimes it is more effective than other times.
Yeah, that was good times. That's so real. So yeah, were you saying she? That's.
Oh yeah, so these peace talks go on for a while. They're not going well, and essentially, the royals end up in a room with Gela one night where they're just like, I think they're just like hanging out, kicking it or something. And mm-hmm. Gela tells them about, you know, there was actually a time in your past where your planets were at peace, and this sort of forever war was on hold for a little bit, and yeah. It was all because of a marriage between the two royal families of the planets, and that is what plants the idea in Ziri's head. Where she goes then the next day to the peace summit and was like, I have the solution. Hear me out. Mm-hmm. We get married. She does not consult with Fontu before she does this. Wait, she basically just proposes right in the room in front of everybody, and he doesn't object. He's just speechless when it happens.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But hold on. Like, when she first announced it, she's like, a wedding peace or something like that. And like the queen is like, well, I already have a wife. Thank you. And then, the king is too old for me. And he's like, I'm like 5 years older than you.
You know, she's like, also like, and he's a man. Ew. Yeah.
It's like so funny. And she's like, I didn't mean you guys, obviously. I meant myself and the like prince. And then the prince is like, whoa. Like, yeah, totally speechless. But like a very like duty bound duty. Like he was like, no, that kind of sounds like a good idea. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. They are both very committed to wanting to protect their worlds. And the fact that this idea comes to the forefront, I think they're both like, well, that sounds like an easy enough way. And at this point, we've seen them, you know, we saw them have tension at the very beginning. And then we see them on, you know, going up into space, into orbit above the mm-hmm. two planets. And Fontu has never left the planet before. And so he's scared. She's a captain of the military. She's flown all over the place. And so she actually, like, on their way up from Iram, like, she comforts him. Mm-hmm. And as he's, like, nervous and sweating and, like, nauseous, and she's just, and she's there for him in that moment. And it's kind of that first moment of, like, it's very sweet kind of between the two of them. And that's kind of the first, like, hints that we get of, like, oh, there might be something kind of building here. Or there could potentially be something that goes right between these two.
Yeah, it's a weird, like, so the romance in the story, like, at least as far as the, I don't know, like, it's in on the back cover of the book, it's sort of billed as like, oh, this uptight Jedi and this like devil may care playboy guy, like, are on a mission together. So like, I'm looking over there for the romance.
Yeah.
And then when these people are like, They're not even mentioned by name, because it's just like, well, the heirs have proposed this wedding peace summit, so they're going to keep them safe. So I wasn't really thinking of them as characters, although, like, once you start to meet them, they're clearly very cool.
Yeah, and they've got, like, great chemistry together. I mean, we don't even get, I mean, this is where I was kind of talking with Alice about how, like, it just does not really ever get mushy, it doesn't get physical, it doesn't get, like, real emotional between the two of them for like most of this book. They've got a very sort of platonic, somewhat kind of keeping mm-hmm. their distance, but like gradually as the story goes on, like at one point Gela sort of observes that they like kind of sit closer and closer together.
Yeah.
And it's just like it builds very slowly and organically in such a sweet way. And I just loved that part of this story.
Yeah, and very, like, organically, none of it's ever seemed forced or, like,
no,
nothing
you're right.
like that. And they were both very, like, hesitant is not the word that I'm looking for.
Cautious,
I guess maybe,
a little bit.
Like, cautiously respect. Like, they were both very, like, well, like, we are doing this for, like, duty. So, like, we don't, like, or considerate of each other's feelings, I think, might even be better.
Yeah.
They weren't
trying
to rush each other, you know?
Not at all. And it was just, it was adorable. And I mean, it wasn't
well
like, it, I think that would have been, I guess I would have, it's kind of hard to believe it because it's like these people I think are both like in their 20s. Like it's sort of alluded to at some point that she's half the age of one of the queens. So like she, and the queen is 60. So Ziri must be like in her 20s or something. And I don't think we ever learn exactly how old Fontu is, but we would assume, I think, around the same age, I guess.
Right. Yeah, yeah, definitely that. And let's see. So, like, they sort of decide, like, okay, well, then they're going to get married. They convince their parents that that's okay. Malo is like, good job, Malo, which is, like, the best thing in the world. So I knew you could do it. they go to like a funeral of the dude Sigaru.
Yeah.
And like you get to see a little bit of the burial rites over there, how like they're entombed in these weird towers.
Yeah.
That was interesting. Yeah.
That's one of the things that I really enjoyed about Andor too, is like we do get to spend some time like sort of getting to know some of the culture and the traditions of these worlds. And that part of any kind of Star Wars storytelling is cool because it just grounds everything in a world of space battles. It brings everything down to earth a little bit. It's always a nice touch.
Loved that. And I loved like it, because as we go through, we sort of travel through more of the world.
Yeah.
So really seeing like a lot of those people, like even in the beginning when Fontu is like helping his people, you see that, hey, they're fishermen, they're this, because it's a water world. That's what they do. Hey, these other people have these other cultures. They all carry around their little knives, which is a hilarious thing and great thing. So they start to make their plans and they're like, okay, like as a symbol, like you guys should go and like distribute aid. Also, we know somebody's trying to kill you. So like, we need investigators/protectors. Gela and Axel go with him. Why Axel? I don't know. But they're like, well, he's going to be like the Republic's like representative is what they like say. You know, a Jedi and a Republic's representative. But I'm still like, it doesn't make any sense, but okay.
Yeah, we'll just go along with it. But it works out for the best because number one, Axel's a great character. So it's just an excuse for us to spend more time with him. And number two, he sort of builds this sort of, you know, this friendship, not only with Gela, he builds this great friendship with Fontu that is like, there's a little bit of like one-upmanship that kind of builds into it at some point that's kind of funny. It's like, just kind of bordering on the line of like getting like toxic masculine. Like it doesn't get quite there, but their relationship is just really funny and really sweet to the point where like it almost kind of seems like he's in a sort of best man-esque but not really role when it comes to the wedding at the end. It's just cute. I really appreciated their friendship throughout the story as much as I did of Axel and Gela together too.
For sure. And like that stuff is like really, really funny. And it's always done in like this little way. It's like, well, you know, Fontu would like take out a box of supplies and Axel would take out two boxes. Like they're like competing lightly as they help people. And it's just like silly and funny.
Yeah.
It's good stuff. So like they're traveling around Arano, I believe.
I think a good chunk of it is Arano because that's where like the sort of like challenge I think comes in with Ciri. Yeah. Like that's where they are for that whole section of the book. And then I think there's a part where Fontu disappears into quicksand or something later. I mean, is that that's happening on Arano too, right?
Yeah, he like falls in a hole. They can't find him, and then he comes back like covered in scorpions, and he's like, okay, so like this is fine, right? Like the scorpion, because I guess like you know. Like, they have these scorpions, and it's the thyle fire or whatever. Scorpions. But on Iram, they're poisonous. So, like, on his planet, like, they can't mess with the scorpions. But on their planet, it's like, oh, they're just cool. They're just cool when you eat them sometimes. Right on.
He comes back, funny. Like, dressed as the Scorpion King. And, I guess that makes him thyle fire made. Which is great, because Ciri is like, yo, that's awesome. Because, like, my people just tried to kill me in this challenge and that sucks, but like I still want their approval and I want them to approve him.
Yeah.
So it works out.
Yeah. So like once they go to render aid and one guy's like, well, like you're like Iram person now. Cause you're like marrying an Iram person, you Iram person. and then he like challenges her to a duel. And then like Gela's like, no, I got this. And then she's like, no, it has to be me. And then Fontu is like, well, I will save you because I'm like, I'm hella noble. She's like, nah, dude, just chill. I got this. And then she like beats up the guy and like, you know, wins the challenge. And then Axel's like, cool, here's the money. I bet on you.
That's right.
So it's like everybody's part in that one little duel. Like that just shows you their characters. Everybody tried to defend her except Axel, who bet on her and then distributed the winnings evenly.
I love this motley crew. Gela, Axel, Ciri, Fontu. This foursome is just so much fun. And I think it's right after that whole part of it that I like made a note of like, oh, I'm having so much fun in this book. I'm loving it so much.
It's great. And like all of his little, he has all these little stingers to a lot of these because, you know, it's a Star Wars book and you're going through a lot of these serious situations. And Axel being there and just saying some like wry little like defeatist comment at the end is usually really, really funny and perfectly placed in whatever the situation is.
It is. And he also has these little great moments of, like, vulnerability where you very much see the sort of, like, kind of crush that he has on Gela building in these really, really sweet ways. I mean, at one point he, like, he gets really upset at, like, a look that she gives him when he kills a bunch of soldiers that were, like, firing on them. And he, like, saved her life. And he's just, like, mad that she is mad at him. It's just, like, he's got this, like, little crush and it's just really sweet.
It's so good. But it's all, and there's so much of this that, like, builds on itself in that way. Like, you know, at first, and it's like, oh, here he comes again. And, like, they all sort of give it, you know, and then, like, by that part that you're talking about, he's like, oh, you're making the, like, I can't believe what you just did, Axel face. And she's like, what? And he's like, yeah, you got three faces. You got the, like, I've gotten the burden of the galaxy face, I'm a serious Jedi Knight face, and I can't believe you just did that Axel face. You know? He, like, calls her out on all her faces. And it's
Which is great, because it's like, we already know at this point that he blames the Jedi for his father's death, and he has this grudge against Jedi in general, and she's slowly, without ever meaning to, without ever having any intention or knowing this information about him, is just breaking down every sort of thing that he has in his mind about what the Jedi are and what they're about. She's just kind of gradually, like, slowly improving his opinion of the Jedi overall, just by being herself, and it's really cute.
And, like, just throughout the book, whenever they talk about it, like, he's described in this way of, like, he just sort of comes in and, like, throws himself on the chairs. So if you saw this picture of Bugs Bunny leaning on a thing in the notes, that's my live look at Axel sitting somewhere right now.
That's 100%. That's major Axel vibes in this picture. Well done. That's it.
That's all I could think about every time he, like, came in and sat down somewhere, because it's always described so, like, vividly.
Yeah.
And, like, at one point, even, like, all three of them, they're like, does he have to come in and throw himself everywhere? So, like, there's a line just like that, and it's, like, just so perfect. Like, even his like, I don't know, his gestures and you know, his, like, the way he carries himself even is so, like, like, devil may care. It's such an unused trope, because you have, like, Han Solos and pirates, but they're not, like, it's not like they don't care. It's like they don't care about you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, they've got, like, a cockiness to them.
Yeah.
But it's different than this, because Axel's got this sort of cockiness to him that's very aloof.
Yeah.
It's not quite the same as, like, a Han Solo situation. It's just, and it's a little bit more, like, elevated in that he's at least in, like, the audiobook, he's got sort of this, like, proper rich man little voice. Like, it's just kind of, like, a little bit higher pitched, and it's got a little accent, and it's just perfect. It's very, very well done.
In Final Fantasy people, he might be like a Setzer or a Balthier. I hope King Tom and Hawes are listening so that they can be like, everybody else, I'm sorry.
I hope that they're listening too, because I don't understand that reference. So I'm just gonna cheer for it.
Yay, Setzer. Let's see. Yeah, so as they're traveling, they're obviously getting to know each other. Like you said, they're Gela and Fontu are sitting closer and closer and closer a little bit each day.
Or Ziri and Fontu,
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Ziri and Fontu, sorry. Like, Axel throws a Yogan fruit off the ship for some reason because he's, like, allergic or something. Like, at one point, and I'm like, all right, like, just don't touch it, bro.
Yeah, you could just not eat it.
But it's so funny. And this is very much like, I picture him, like, walking, well, hello, everybody, you. And then, like, whoop. It's just so funny. Like, so many of the visuals and the moments of joy from this book are Axel.
Yes.
And so it comes to the moments of heartache.
Oh, yes.
There's a really cool story, because they're talking about their, like, legends. And Fontu is like, well, you know, our seas were created by this, like, the god that swam through, and it created the waves and the mountains and this and that about the planets. And then they're asking Gela, and they're like, do you have any, like, stories, like, from your home? And she's like, describe home.
Yeah.
Which comes up a few times.
Yeah. She's like, I don't really have a home. I guess the Jedi Temple, is my home.
She's like, my master would tell me this story about this Jedi who wanted to, like, see the whole galaxy or whatever. So they told him to, like, travel on the seam of the galaxy until you reach the end. But as he traveled, you know, his, like, he ran into people that needed help and so would like take all these detours and stuff. And then at the end, it's like, maybe you did do it. Like, and then Axel's just like, that sounds really sad. It's like the worst story I've ever heard. Yeah, he's like, man, Jedi are depressing.
There's really, really well distributed bits of humor in this book. Most of it comes, I think, from Axel's part, but overall, it's very, it's really funny. This book is so enjoyable in so many ways, and the humor is just one of them.
Like, I do give a lot of points to Fontu showing up covered in scorpions so much that they don't even know what he is. They think he's a monster.
Fontu, in general, also provides a lot of like humor for me, just in that he's a little... He's a little bit of like a himbo, just a little bit. Like,
I didn't
want to
say it, but okay.
It's not to the point of like Elzar Man, but he's got a little bit of Elzar Man himbo vibes going, just not quite to the same degree. It's just really charming, though, and really funny. And
but he's like so devoted to his duty. And then he's like, you know, they're like, oh, you're going to marry like that, you know, and he's like, look, I'm going to like be loyal. Like, this is what my world needs. I'm going to be the best damn prince husband. You know,
he is, and I bet really he is the best damn prince husband.
Seems like he is so far. He's doing a really good job. We also get Axel finally comes clean with Gela and tells her the story about his dad, you know, and then he says something about like, you know, I saw that Jedi later, like we were doing something on Coruscant with my mom, and I like went and said something to her and she didn't recognize me or whatever. Why would she? I'm just at like 1,000 kids. None of us matter to you guys. Like, you know, I was just one more person in trouble that she saved once on a planet somewhere.
Yeah, and this is the thing about Axel is that we get a lot of... He's, you know, sort of our morally gray character. And he's... And the thing is that he's very... You can kind of see how he's justified in his dislike for the Jedi. Because the way that he describes the story is, like, they yanked him away when he tried to, like, help his father, who was killed on this mission. And then basically told him afterwards, like, well... That's just the will of the Force. And he's like, what the hell? Yeah. Like, are you serious right now? I mean, it's basically like the same thing of them being like oh, thoughts and prayers, peace out. And like, that's it.
Big time Martez sisters energy, you know?
Yeah.
You know, same thing. Oh, sorry about your family. Peace.
Yeah. And then they don't even remember the fact that this is some person that had, they had this huge role. They played this huge role in the biggest tragedy of this person's life. It's just kind of rolls off of them.
Yeah. And that is sad, but it's also like, I don't know, like from the, even the description of the story, it's like, nah, dude, your dad was dead, bro.
Yeah. It's like, what it were they supposed to do? Cut. Let you die?
Yeah. And I'm, I don't know. I'm very much like on that side, but I get it. And I guess like at the end, it kind of comes down to the same thing. Like the Martez, it's the apathy.
Yeah.
Towards these people. All right, next. And that does suck. So sorry about your dad, bro.
Yeah.
And that's when it rains. Rain finally returns to Erino and the curse is broken that they like said was going to happen or something. So like everybody's like, oh, it's going to be great. It's going to be good times from here on out. Spoilers. It was not good times from here on out.
Yeah. The rain does kind of blow everybody's mind since they are on a desert planet.
And they were like fighting, like as they travel to these little outposts, they've had a few like run-ins. Some of them were like fine. Some of them were like, oh, are you actually going to marry the prince? Like, you know, and then like one of them, they were fighting what they were saying. It was like they were dressed like Iram soldiers, but then they were like, but that wasn't like Iram. That's not how it Iram. Like they said, they called it the Timekeeper Moon. Like, that's not how they say it. That's what we say. And then like they get in the base and it says Children of Erino. So it's like, they were trying to pretend to be the, you know, and this is like more of that stuff of like everybody's pointing the finger at everybody else.
Yeah. A lot of treachery happening on both sides. This is the whole part where they like are in the ship and they have to jump out and they only have 3 parachutes, right?
We already passed. That's right. Yeah. And Gela throws the parachute on everybody and throws him out and is like, all right, bye bye.
Yeah, and like Axel's like the last one to get off the ship, and he's just like, I can't. I mean, it kind of seems like he doesn't want to like leave her behind, but she's just like, nah, man. Like, you take that parachute. I'm just gonna jump, and we're just gonna like see what happens. And then like as soon as the moment kind of comes, she's just like not scared at all. She actually has like a little bit of this like kind of thrill seeker, like adrenaline junkie vibe happening, where she's like pumped about it, and she just like goes for it and jumps, and she lives. So that's something.
But then when we like cut to the ground, they're like, and then a third shadow is walking out, and you're like, oh, okay, like, there's Axel, except it's not Axel, it's Gela. And they're like, wait, what happened to the Axel? And then, like, they find him later, and he's like, he made friends with everybody in the forest or at the little outpost, and is, like, just hanging out with them drinking or something. Like, I can't remember exactly what happened, but they, like, find him later.
Yeah, something like that. That sounds right.
It's, like, good times. So let's see, like, they sort of, they finish their, all their, like, aid, and, like, they've gotten to know each other so much better, and now, like, they're kind of splitting up and doing the thing. So, they're basically trying to find, they arrest the, not Sigaru, no, it's, they arrest the Viceroy, right?
It's like, maybe it's the Viceroy's son, Rev Beryl is the son, and I think he's, is revealed at some point to sort of have been behind a lot of this.
So they arrest him, but they're trying to find, like, stuff on him. And Axel's like, well, I can figure it out. And they send Gela with him. So they, like, fly out to this little, you know, planet asteroid bar that he hangs out on and gambles. And Gela ends up in a pit fight with other Jedi. Spoilers, it's not other Jedi.
Yeah, it's somebody with a double-bladed lightsaber who is not, in fact, a Jedi. And he's not even, like... I don't even think he's like a real malicious guy. I think he's a wrestler playing a character.
It who's was pretending totally that.
To be. Yeah.
It was like... it was very much the like, wait, man, I said take the fall, bro. Like
he's the heel. Like and the game was fixed and he was supposed to win, and then he comes up against an actual Jedi, Gela, and he's like, oh shit.
Yeah. When they like leave, it's like, oh, and here came Gela, but now she has three lightsabers? What? But basically, like, she wins the fight kind of. But then, like, they're captured anyway. And the girl who's, like, dealing with Axel gives Axel the blackmail info on the Viceroy. And then is like, well, thanks for the Jedi or whatever. We're going to break her. Ha ha ha. And Axel's like, no, you're not.
Yeah.
And then he's like, you should just leave her. Because, like, I think by this time we know that he's not as careless as we think. He is, like, working with the mother on stuff.
Yeah,
he was supposed to sabotage the Jedi, and then he, like, doesn't want to. And so he ends up going back and saving her. He, like, I don't know, like, pulls the fire alarm is the right word. Oh, no, I think he just, like, fires a blaster and people start scattering and he goes and he saves her.
Yeah, first he, like, finds the dude that's holding her lightsabers and just, like, kills him and takes the hilt. So we're still in a sort of morally gray area with Axel. He's not quite on either end of the spectrum yet. Yeah. We're still... He's still figuring it out, which is great. We get to go on this journey with him while he figures it out.
I remember, like, and this is so much more of a, it ends up being a little more complex, especially even me, or to us as the reader. Because normally when these moments happen in a book, like, you get to the point where the secret is revealed and their true intentions, motivations, or whatever. And then the rest of the book, you're looking through their eyes and all their actions make sense from that point of view. I think we find out he's working with the mother before that, and then here's his chance to get rid of the Jedi, and he goes back for her.
Yeah.
So I think, like, not only is it a sign of how conflicted he is personally, but also, like, for us as the reader, we're as lost as he is.
Yeah, you know? There's also, I think, a couple of times where Gela sort of expresses this thing where she can't read him. And it's like, you know, you think of Jedi as being very in tune with not only, you know, their own emotions, but, like, in tune with the emotions of those around them. And she cannot get a read on him. And we learn, I think, very much later that he has gotten very good at sort of shoving everything down.
Yeah.
But also he's just in general, he's very conflicted. He's going back and forth, I think, just in his own mind a lot throughout the story.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, it's really good and it's really well done. And then, like, as opposed to just sort of, like, flipping whatever Axel is, it just sort of makes him more complex. And I still don't sometimes understand his motivations.
Yeah.
Like, he's, no, 100%. He's as much, which, I mean, I guess, like, multiple times through the story, he mentions, like, that he thrives in chaos.
Yeah.
And he loves chaos. And so much, like, I think the mother even calls him Chaos.
That's, like, his, I think, his code name or his alias or something for her, yeah.
That kind of holds true that even he doesn't understand himself and what he really wants sometimes. And that's sad.
Yeah. Yeah. And we get that. I mean, we definitely get that at the end, I think, with, like, him and Fontu, when he basically takes a bullet, essentially, for Fontu. It's just like, wait, what? Like, the minute you think that you have a sort of handle, because at that point we've already learned what's going on between him and the mother, you think you have a handle on this character in some ways, and it's just, you just never do. He's like, he's an anomaly. It's it's really fun to watch.
He's like quite literal chaos. Like, even the people who think that they have his motivations and his stuff under control, like, are not, they don't.
Yeah, exactly.
We never have mentioned his droid, but he has a little droid called QN1, and it's Quinn, and it's like just really adorable and floats around him, and multiple times throughout the story, it's a great like sidekick.
It is, and it's supposed to, I think, be a sort of like therapy droid for him. Like, that's what it was given to him in the first place for. Mm-hmm. Alice said that she was sort of envisioning this droid as like Lola from Kenobi, because we don't have a real clear idea of exactly what this QN1 droid is or what it looks like. But it's actually really, like, it's really funny because, like, multiple times I think throughout the book, people are just like, you know, you could get a newer droid. We could get you a better, more souped up, more capable droid. And he's like, fuck no, dude. Hell no.
Quinn's my boy.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So we find out that the queen that was working with Iram and the queen of Iram, who, like, was working with the mother at some point, you know, they were getting relief for a little while, and then What the mother wanted was them to give them poison or something from the thyle fire, not the thyle, from the other scorpions on Iram, which are poisonous and apparently larger.
Yeah.
So like when, I think it's like Axel, when they get attacked by the scorpions that are actually poison on the other planet, he's like, you didn't say they were bigger. So I was getting like very like Aliens vibes.
Yes. Yeah, 100%.
So he's like, Axel is supposedly helping Fontu, who's like found out what his mother has done and is going to like destroy these research facilities.
Yeah. I love this though, this ride though that they take. Like, Fontu's like, hey, I need your help. It's like something to do with the wedding. Mm-hmm. And so they get in like his ship and he's like, I have, you know, just drive. I know where we're going. And Axel, like, asks him at one point, he's like, when he talks about, like, you know, I want to go, I just want to, like, you know, go talk about, like, wedding things. And Axel's like, do you need me to, like, tell you what to do on your wedding night?
Yeah, he's like, should I draw you a diagram, he says.
It's so good. Oh, my God. Yeah. This is, again, like, their friendship is just so fun and so funny to me.
And, like, Fontu is like, no! So it's nothing but good times.
Oh God, it's so good.
Yeah. Like I said, like the relationships, the characters, top notch in this book. I really like, it's clear we're going to see some of these characters again. And I hope to see the rest. Like, I don't know if we're going to see Fontu and Ziri again, but I hope they remain a big part of phase two.
Oh, I'm thinking that they're going to show up because they're supposed to, at the end of it, I think they decide that they're going to be going to Jeddah.
Oh, that's right.
For some sort of signing of a treaty or some, I don't even know.
Right.
But I have a feeling that that's going to like tie in with the Battle of Jeddah. I don't know.
What is it? Path of Deceit. They're all talking about going to the thing on Jeddah. And then this book was called Convergence. And for some reason I was like, oh, that's where everybody's going to that thing on Jeddah. And this was not that at all.
Yeah, I think they just had, like, a bunch of titles on a piece of paper, and they, like, threw darts at it to be like, which one's going to be this? And they landed on Convergence somehow. Go.
Sweet. Look, I don't know what I would have called it, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't either. I don't either. Because you can't take Romeo and Juliet, so I don't know.
Dual loves.
Duality actually would have been a good one, I think. There's another part while they're on this ship where basically Fontu kind of confronts Axel about how Axel likes Gela, and like he kind of plays it off and like doesn't get into it, but at the fact that he's just like, are you perhaps lamenting something that you can't have? And it's just cute. They're just so cute.
Yeah And this is the part where Axel is like, no, it kind of switches. He turns it around on him, so that's pretty good.
He does.
What point for Fontu.
Yep. They're perfect.
Yeah, so they confront the queen at one point, or like Fontu I know confronts his mother. And it's about, like, all, you know, finds out that she's been dealing with the mother and the path and all that. And, you know, but she's like, look, I'm trying to destroy everything in these facilities and da-da-da-da. At first it was just aid. And so they're like, but Axel stole some of the poison while they were there. And so, like, now he has it, right? And, like, in theory, this is his mission, his secret mission for the mother.
Yeah. So there, we get, like, some flashbacks, I think, of Axel basically being handed this mission. And I think it must be, like, before he takes the sting of the scorpion, he somehow gets, like, 3 vials of the poison and hides it on himself before they destroy the rest of it.
Right, right. And then, let's see. Oh, okay. The wedding rehearsal. Like, where Axel and Gela dance.
Yeah.
That is, like, this is, like, where all the romance stuff starts to hit really hard. And they have, like, a beautiful little conversation. And this is where she's, like, I think he's, like, well, if you weren't a Jedi and I wasn't, you know, whatever I am.
Yeah.
And she's, like, well, I'm only a Jedi. I don't even know what I would be. You know. And it's really cute and really beautiful. And then it goes to, like, what does he say? Well, he says something like, well, maybe in another life.
Yeah, you know? he maybe in the next life. And then he kisses her hand, but he kind of lingers before his mother walks up and interrupts the entire thing. But building up to this, I mean, they did have like one moment at one point. They're having a conversation and she like put her hand on his, and they had this sort of cute moment. A couple of like things of those things sort of building up to this.
Yeah.
And then he asks her to dance, and she first she says no, but he just says please, and then she acquiesces.
Yeah.
So there you go.
And even like when she rescues him, or when he rescues her, you know, she's like, you didn't have to come back for me.
Yeah.
You know, I thought you wouldn't. You're always so sad. And he's like, well, I'm doing what I want to. And I love like, you know, breaking people's expectations. Aha.
Or something. She's like, yeah, mission accomplished. You
know? So like, it's, yeah, there's, that's like a really good one. And everything is like going fine and perfect. And then he goes to his room and his droid is busted.
Yeah, and that's when the Viceroy jumps him,
yeah,
I think. But Axel kills him?
Yep.
Oof.
Yeah. And then he basically has to, like, escape. He goes, like, I guess he's, like, trying to gather the pieces. But he's like, I can't do this in time and sneak out. People are, you know, he can already hear people are coming. So he just takes the vials of poison and, like, runs away.
Yeah, and he has to leave the pieces of Quinn behind, but at this point, Gela has sort of sensed this disturbance in the Force based on what's just happened, and she's the one who actually finds Quinn, and she takes the pieces and gets a repair kit and puts Quinn back together.
Yeah, they all put the droid back together, and then they're able to watch all the stuff, and they're like, they learn everything about his dealings and the path, and like all, so they learn all of his crimes, and they're like, holy crap.
Yeah, this isn't great. So the next day at the wedding, they're watching all of the guests arrive, and they notice that these guests are not dressed in formal wear.
This
they do not look like
super
wedding guests.
Red.
As it turns out, they're all bounty hunters, and they're all there for Axel.
Yeah, so he like planted this little like tracker or something so that they would think he's there, and they end up crashing the wedding, and like, so Fontu and Ziri are getting married and it's all beautiful. And then people are like shooting and she like grabs the blaster and she's like, you know, be right back, babe. Let's do what we do. They're getting married, he's like, by the way, I am like crazy in love with you.
Oh, God. Their little moment here is so great. And I kept thinking that like this wedding and like the wedding rehearsal and everything the day before, like it goes on for a while to the point where I'm just like, have I already missed the wedding? Do we not get to like see that and hear their vows? No. We kind of don't, but we do see this one part that is just so good where she sees one of these bounty hunters behind them because there's chaos that has broken out around them. And she's like, wait, hold on just a second. And she's like, conceal the blaster somewhere. I don't know if we want to know where. She's got it somewhere. She pulls it out, shoots him. And then they cute. And he's just like, yeah, I'm so in love with you. I'm like, oh, God.
Yeah, it's like perfect.
I love them.
Very, very like romance warrior vibes. Very aggressive
again,
negotiation vibes.
I'm getting so scared at this point in the book. I'm like, I swear to God, if any single one of these, none of these, there has to be one of these people that does not make it out of this book. And I'm going to be so mad. Mm-hmm. Whoever it is. Mm-hmm. I thought for sure one of them would.
That's true. I didn't even think about that.
Oh, I was terrified.
Yeah. And so basically she's like, she goes to her squadron. He's like, you do what you do, you know, and I'm going to help the people evacuate. So like they use their strengths to do their thing. And she goes and pilot your squadron, and the Viceroy or the Viceroy's son, you know, is like chasing her, but he's like an older ship, and she's like, aha. She like tricks him into like, it's almost like a commentary on the like blind rage and not understanding the war and like taking time to listen. And she's like flying her ship at the ground as they're like having this conversation in the comms. And she's like, because you can never think ahead. And then she pulls up and his old ship can't do it. And he dies because he crashes into the sea.
Yeah, because she's like, hey, I'm on IRAM. I'm in an IRAM ship. And mm-hmm. these motherfuckers can go in the water.
They're better. Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Super. And it's so great because she's an Erino princess in an IRAM ship. And it just is perfection. And you're right. I love that they get married. They say their vows. The wedding bells ring and they go their separate ways. And they play to their own strengths to defend their people. And it's just so perfect. I love it.
Yeah. Oh, it's like, and the person who arrests Axel is Gela.
Yeah.
So she finds him and is like, what are you doing, dude? And he's like, I know, right?
Yeah.
And it's like a little bit heartbreaking and very sad, but also like, I don't know. It's like bittersweet because they like air a few things out, but then she's like, I can't, like, there's no, you know, I know you can do whatever you want, but like, I am duty bound. And like, that's it.
Yeah, they're standing in one of the towers and it starts to like the ceiling like starts to fall down on them in the midst of all of this battle that's happening around them. And he tells her if they die, he's going to haunt her ghost for eternity. Again, like these little like quips from Axel are so perfect. And she's like, the Jedi don't believe in ghosts.
Yeah.
And he's like, leave it to me to fall for a humorless Jedi.
No, like, he asks her, he's like, if we die, will you haunt me? You know, and she's like, we don't do the ghosts. And he's like, oh.
And we're all like, us readers are just like, what's a force ghost? Sorry. Is that not a thing yet for you guys? That comes later? Okay.
And it's all like there's no good way out for them either, but we're all still as readers hoping there's something.
I know, but like that's kind of like, I mean, I think that's the moment. Like he tells her, leave it to me to fall for a humorless shit. Like we get the confirmation where he says it out loud to her. Yeah. And then he falls down unconscious and she's the one who has to like lift the rocks, if you will.
Yeah.
Away from them to save them.
So she saves him and arrests him. What he did is he like destroyed the shields that basically keep the waves at bay on that planet on Iron.
That's right, the dome. That's
so
right.
That's okay. Why like the cities was crumbling and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I forgot about that detail.
Yeah. And so she like was trying to stop him from destroying that one, but he's like, oh, it's actually three. And so he blows the other ones up and like, you know, they all kind of don't work when you blow them up. So that's why everything was falling apart. Okay. So that's like pretty much the end of everything, but there's a lot of little aftermath stuff here. So the Chancellor is fine. Axel's arrested.
Yeah.
That's where you were talking to Iram and Erino are going to send the delegation to Jeddah.
Well, and I can't remember at this part, what did the vials of poison all get destroyed? Because he tells Gela there are two more, they're each in one of the towers, and then they're like, might be more poison in this archive, wherever that is. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if that part of the story, I can't remember if that part of it gets cleaned up and
I don't remember them,
not.
Yeah, like once they arrest him and everything, I don't remember the poison coming up again.
Okay, yeah, so maybe it doesn't get resolved. Remember. Yeah.
Or maybe I just didn't care anybody about Gela, Zin, Fontu, and Axel.
Well, I know that the part of the, like, there being more poison in the archive is definitely not resolved. So it's like, okay, well, that might come back actually later at some point in phase two, I would think.
Mm-hmm. Right. So let's see. So we have, like, they sort of have, like, one dinner before Gela leaves.
Like, yeah, Gela, she has Ziri, dinner with the couple. Fontu,
and with a brand new married couple. Aww. And they're, like, all, like, very sad and hurt by Axel's actions and stuff, and they're like, and it's like it's sad. I don't know. It's so well done. Just like the character stuff is so well done. Like it's hard to say anything about it with just repeating the book verbatim. you know what I mean? Like I don't know how to describe a hurt scene other than redo the chapter.
yeah, which everybody should just read the book. Honestly.
Yeah, do that.
But they do tell her, like, hey, you know, we're going to go to Jeddah. We're going to sign this treaty. Like, why don't you come? We'll hang out. We'll have a little reunion. And she tells them basically no, that she's being called elsewhere. So we'll see how that plays out.
Yeah. So she goes to see the Chancellor and the Chancellor or no, she doesn't go to. I think she goes to see her master. Is it or not her master, but is it? She goes to see either Charbel Roy or Creighton's son, one of the masters that was there on the mission. And they are like, by the way, Greylark gave you his ship. the Eventide, Axel's ship.
They were Chancellor gives them the ship.
Yeah, like they didn't want his like stupid friends to have it. And also, it was pretty good.
So she gets the Eventide. She gets her own ship, which is very nice.
And then she like announces that she's going to be a Wayseeker. And I think it's like, it might be Sun, because he's like, oh, I will announce it to the you know, council or whatever like that.
Yeah, she says that she's going to go to Coruscant to tell the council, and he tells her that he's happy for her and he supports her, and that I think maybe he says, like, I'll go with you or something. I don't know.
Yeah. But very much like, I will put the word, you have my vote or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know how Wayseeking works. But very much like she's going to go do her own thing and find that duty along that seam, I guess. I don't know. And then the very like last epilogue is Axel on the prison ship.
Yeah, I was very surprised to get an epilogue in this book. I kind of thought like, oh, we've sort of wrapped everything up. It's just, and it was a nice little bow on top of everything, but it all takes place in Axel's cell.
Yeah, and he's still kind of like, not like quite plotting, but like figuring out whatever he's going to do. And it's very like, and he's like, well, you know, like I did say they don't want me in prison because I'll just end up running the place. So like it leave, like it's very clear that he's going to be doing something. And obviously he's on the cover of the next book. So
yeah. The mother does somehow manage to get a message to him within the prison.
Yeah.
Where she tells him, do you now see what comes of trusting a Jedi? Like, this is what you get. She says, but I promise I have not abandoned you, my chaos. Mm-hmm. And he spends his time picking fights when he's bored in the jail. And he thinks of Gela. He tries not to, but he thinks about her. And I love that.
He really, like, they mention it a few times. They call it, like, pressing the bruise.
Yeah.
He very much, like, you know, like goes back to these points of hurt to give himself energy or whatever.
And for a long time, that bruise was basically what happened, what went down with his father. And now it's essentially these sort of unresolved and, you know, unrequited feelings for Gela.
Yeah. Beautiful book. Phase two is like 3 for 3 so far.
Yeah.
Axel, I have no idea what direction this character goes, and this is like the most open-ended a character could be, because in the damn book I didn't know what he was gonna do next.
Yeah He was very hard to predict, and I'm not saying we're in like exactly the same spot as we were in the beginning with his story, but we're still there's still so much conflict with him where it's really hard to predict where his story is going to go. But I will say this, he looks younger on this cover of Cataclysm than he sounds in the audiobook, and that I sort of interpreted. But what do we think planet this is? This isn't Coruscant that he's on. It looks like there's water maybe in the background, so maybe he's back on Iram. I don't know.
Maybe. I mean, those are domes.
Yeah, and he's got what looks like one of Gela's lightsabers. Yeah. So I'm like, she must be coming back into the story at some point, and that's what has me scared for the Battle of Jeddah, because I'm like, how is he coming out of the Battle of Jeddah, number 1, alive, and number 2, with one of her sabers?
Right. Yes, that's very worrying.
Yeah.
That was the first thing that I noticed, too. I was like, well, that's one of Gela's sabers.
Yeah. Not happy about that. No. So, I don't know. I'm going to go in with low expectations as to who's going to survive.
To be fair, she had an extra saber.
She does have two. Yeah.
She
did.
Like, she still has two. Because she stole that other guy's from the pit fighting or whatever.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
You know, although, like, if I was her, I would have been like, hey, you could take this one.
Yeah.
But maybe she was like, maybe she was feeling a little more romantic and being like, take mine. Like, these are, that way we can always, you know, hear each other's hearts or something.
I'll be a part of you forever. You can have one of my sabers.
Yes. When you want to poke the bruise, squeeze the saber. I don't
know.
The path of the open hand, who are shaping up to be quite conniving.
Yeah, quite the adversaries in this phase.
Yeah, but there's still so much like cloak and daggery that I still don't really know what their ultimate goal is. Other than like they clearly got beef with the Jedi. And they want to.
And like at this.
Yeah.
we know that, like, they already have access to the leveler. We know that.
Yeah.
We know that the mother is out there sort of having other people, other members of her, like, children collect other force artifacts to what end, we don't know. And we basically have them on the Gaze Electric. Now they're mobile. Now they're, like, now they can go
That's
anywhere
right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And cause whatever havoc they want to anywhere. Mm-hmm. And we also have the unresolved thing where now the mother has somebody on the inside working against her in the Herald who mm-hmm. basically wants to install Marta as the head of this
And we
cult.
Also have Marta going to Jeddah to this whatever this convergence is
yeah.
of all the Force people going to Jeddah. So yeah, I think I still feel like they're the big bad slash major, you know, anti-good people.
Antagonists, yeah. Well, then we also, now they've got this, like, poison, or the knowledge, at least, of the poison, which is what they were after mm-hmm. through this entire book, Convergence. So not sure where that's going to come back into play. But yeah, we're not totally sure what their motivations are to what end. We just know that they don't like the Jedi, and they think the Force should be free and should not be used by the Jedi. So that's... I don't know. We'll see where it goes.
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, it's like super high chances that we're going to see Axel, who's on the cover of the book, and Gela again. But I really hope to see Fontu and Ziri again also.
I do too, and I hope nothing bad happens to them, because if they do, I don't know if I can go on. I need them to be together and be happy. And I know that they probably won't be, but...
How dare you try to make me cry.
Right?
Star Wars. I'm like,
I really love them. I just enjoyed the absolute shit out of this book. My one complaint, though, was with the audiobook component, was the mother's voice differed quite a bit in this book than it did, like, from Path of Deceit.
In Path of Deceit, Deceit, it's so, like, even the description and the words, it's like, it was so, like, melodic, and her way of, like, speaking was very, like, beautiful. And then in this book, it's very, like, Southern. I don't know how to say it, but maybe
no,
that
was I mean,
it?
That's pretty much it. I mean, like, so in, like, the Path of Deceit audiobook, it's like, number one, it's a woman who narrates it, so it's obviously mm-hmm. very different than Mark Thompson's interpretation. But the fact that she has, like, she kind of talks in this, like, high-pitched, like, quick voice, like, it's very, like, straightforward, but very high-pitched. Mm-hmm. And then, like, and it's an American accent, like, a pretty much mm-hmm. pretty straight American accent. And then in the audiobook of Convergence, it's got this Southern twang to it, and it is weird. It is weird, and it's fine. It didn't work for me. It'll probably work for some people, but it was, I don't know, interesting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Make sure you're checking out all these books. I will be recording a podcast on Path of Deceit. I mean, hopefully you'll have heard that before you hear this one, but we'll see what happens. You never know.
Yeah, that's my thing with this. Like, Alice and I were having this argument where she was like, you need to read Path of Deceit. It's a really good book, number one. She thinks that you kind of need that background for this book. I think that you can read them in either order.
Yeah.
I think you do need Path of Deceit. Everyone should read it. Number one, it's very good, and you mm-hmm. do need the context of the Path of the Open Hand. But I think you could get away with reading it after this
you
book.
Totally could. Like, all, like, you know, you don't have to know what the Path of the Open Hand is doing, just knowing that they're shady.
Yeah.
And then, like, maybe reading that book and sort of that putting you on your guard and introducing you more to them might be kind of interesting to do the other way, actually.
And it's a fast read too. I mean, if you've already if you're listening to this because you've already gotten through Convergence, like, it's gonna be a quick read for you to go back and read mm-hmm. Path of Deceit, and then we'll be in January, and then we'll have Battle of Jeddah, and I just feel like you're gonna want to have that context by then. But I mean, I don't know, no idea.
Right, for sure. What did they announce? Didn't they announce the they showed the cover for, what is it, Battle Scars? Did you see that today?
Ooh, no, I don't think I had a insane day, so I didn't see anything on Twitter today.
I can bring it up. Well, it was announced on Twitter, so, you know, go check it out. And it's like, it's basically like the cast of the Mantis crew, but, like, the fifth brother is on there too.
Oh.
So, you know, people are like, whoa, he's gonna be everywhere, look at him go. You know, but I mean, that makes sense. Inquisitors after Jedi, And also that dude just, yeah.
I'm so excited for this because I am not a gamer and I unfortunately will never be able to play these Fallen Order games. So mm-hmm. I'm very excited to have my own, Cal Kestis. I'm excited to be able to get to participate in the Cal Kestis conversation by way of this book. So very pumped for that. That says March 7th is when that comes out.
Yes. And I guess, yeah, like, so I'm already diving into the comic. Yesterday they released the number one of the High Republic Adventures, which is Padawan Sav Maligan, and it's like super dope.
I've heard very, very good things. Yeah. I think since the last time you and I talked, issue 2 came out of the main run of the comics. Mm-hmm. I haven't read it yet. I did buy it, download it. I just haven't had a chance to sit down and read it.
Yeah, yeah. I reread number one and then went to number two again. So far, it's like pretty cool and enjoyable, but I'm still waiting to see like what we're doing and where we're going.
Yeah, you know? It's sometimes easier when there's like a couple of issues out that you can kind of sit back and like read them all, and then you get a better handle, I think, on the characters. Yeah, like, when it's these short little chapters like this, it's kind of hard to remember everything when they're a month at a time coming out.
Exactly. Like comic books are so, they're so like small, like bite size. You need to get like the whole thing. But I like it's especially more difficult in these new series where you don't know the characters yet.
Yeah, exactly. You know? We'll get there though.
Yeah. We will be there soon. All right. Well, thank you very much for coming on the show and talking books with me.
Thank you so much for having me, Sal. This is amazing. I am very much enjoying our book conversations. This is so fun. Yes,
we're going to make it a thing. It's totally
I love it.
Just make sure you're following us on the web. Make sure you're, Spotify playlisting us, because I got High Republic playlists. Go check it out. It's going to have this on it, which will also be included on my books and stories playlists.
Nice.
You know, I try to keep it clean. I try to do everything nice and have everything organized for people. So, good times. That's it. Podcast over. We love these four characters.
Yes, we do. Unconditionally.
Exactly. Even though one of them's in jail.
Mm-hmm. It's just still like, love him. Man, I don't care.
He's so likable.
He is.
It's really sad and disappointing. It's like, man, you had it all. You just kinda,
except the girl. Yeah, don't know if almost. He was ever going to get the girl, we'll see.
That's rough. I get it.
The fate of all Jedi. For control of the Force itself.